This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The Boston area is a very expensive place to live, especially because of its high cost of housing. But supporters of the Massachusetts Affordable Housing Law, also known as Chapter 40B, say the situation would be even worse if the law didn't exist. They say 40B has spurred the construction of almost 30,000 new affordable housing units in the state. Enter John Belskis and the Coalition for the Repeal of 40B. They say the state's affordable housing law should be removed from the law books. They say it's been abused by developers who use it to enrich themselves and sometimes build big projects on small lots. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you think Massachusetts should do away with its affordable housing law? Do you live in a community that's fought a 40B project? Or do you own a home thanks to 40B and you want to see the law preserved? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join the conversation online at wbur.org/Boston. To debate the merits of the state's affordable housing law, I'm joined in the studio by John Belskis. He's the chairman of the Coalition to Repeal 40B. Welcome to Radio Boston, John.
Pleased to be here.
And on the other side is Tripp Jones, chairman of the Vote No on 2 campaign. Welcome to you too, Tripp.
Thanks, Sasha. Great to be here.
John and Tripp, I wonder if we could first talk about things we agree on, which is basically what this law does. So 40B has been around since 1969. It allows developers to basically shortcut the approval process for affordable housing. So instead of a variety of permits, they can just get one permit if they pledge that between 20 and 25% of the units they build will be affordable housing. Is that right?
You've studied it well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole process by which the community and the developers need to go about coming up with their plans for that development, Sasha. So it's a short circuiting of what would otherwise be an extremely burdensome process in getting a development proposed and built.
And once communities attain 10% affordable housing in their communities, they no longer have to abide by 40B in the sense that developers can no longer take that shortcut route. So the goal here is to try to get communities to at least have 10% affordable housing, and if they don't, developers are given incentives to try to help them get there. Is that fair?
And there are other options also. There's also a 1.5% rule that allows a community that has exceeded 1.5% of its total buildable land area to contain affordable housing. You don't hear as much about that one.
So we'll focus mostly on...
Yeah, but the idea, Sasha, was to have a law that would ensure that all of our communities were contributing to the state's efforts to build necessary affordable housing for our working families, middle class, seniors, and...
Rather than just densely developed
correct.
Urban communities where we tend to see
correct.
Most
That's
affordable
right.
housing. This was an effort to try to get the suburbs to build more housing, more
That's
affordable
right.
housing, too. So, John Belskis, you are chairman of the Coalition to Repeal the state's affordable housing law. Now, as you know, affordable housing advocates say that it's basically been very successful in encouraging affordable housing, that something like 80% of all the affordable housing we have in the state is due to this law. So why repeal it?
Because I dispute a lot of those figures. The law, in our eyes, is a failure. It's been around for 41 years, and it's got us neatly placed in something like 47 out of the 50 states in affordability. That isn't a great success story. And if you work the math, 41 years, and depends on whose numbers you're looking at, 351 cities and towns, you'll find it comes out to less than 2 units per year per city and town in 41 years. That's not great production.
So you don't think the law is doing what it was meant to do?
It's not really doing it. Besides that, a lot of people don't realize Massachusetts General Law 40B, when it was promulgated, was exclusively for affordable rental housing.
And now it's both homes and rentals.
Right.
Tripp Jones, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. No, I think, Sasha, this whole debate comes down to a simple question as to whether or not in Massachusetts we want to be building more affordable housing or less. Massachusetts, as you said, is an extremely expensive place to live. Our working middle class populations are facing all kinds of challenges. I spent a number of years putting an organization together that focuses on the health and well-being of our middle class. I got involved in these issues because time and time again, there was research done that highlighted just how much this cost of living and specifically housing is doing to overburden our middle class. The law that we're here talking about that John is trying to blow up and repeal is responsible in the last 10 years for 80% of all of the new affordable housing that's been built outside of our major cities. That's a fact. And it's been looked at, by the way, by numerous organizations. Everybody's backed it up and confirmed that it's correct.
We should note here that by affordable housing, we're not necessarily talking about housing projects which require Section 8 vouchers. We're talking essentially about people who have 80% of the median state income.
That's correct.
So this largely tends to be municipal employees, teachers, firefighters, police officers.
I think that's
officers.
A bit of a misnomer. If you look at the people that are populating these, that isn't necessarily so. What we find is that the lowest rung, the people most desperately need affordable housing, isn't being served at all by this law. The working poor just can't get the wherewithal or do not have the finances to qualify for a mortgage. And the folks that you speak of, the teachers, police, fire, generally if they're a two-person family, they exceed the income limits. We find that the window of opportunity for a 40B unit is somewhere around 10% of the total population that might be eligible for it.
John Belskis, your group believes that 40B is abused. You
Absolutely.
Think that developers can inflate their costs as a way to make it look like they're earning less when in fact they can sort of boost profits and sometimes override conservation restrictions and zoning laws that towns put in place to protect the town, and suddenly they can't enforce those laws. Can you give some specific examples of how you think this has been abused, this law?
Well, a lot of it is essentially, as the State Inspector General pointed out, is the overview of what the profits truly are. Now, back again to rental housing, which has been on the decrease even with the utilization of 40B, profits were very well controlled. They were looked at almost monthly to be sure they weren't exceeding the proper level, which was 20%. The ownership units, on the other hand, there's no vehicle or method that audits approves. As a matter of fact, the State Inspector General made note of the fact that there's over 400 of these units that have never been certified or audited.
John Tripp Jones, John is talking about this Inspector General report a few years ago that found that developers of 40B were underreporting profits that they owed about $100 million to the communities. What's your take on that?
I think the important thing here to remember, Sasha, is that the Inspector General did a report that raised questions about five specific projects. There have been over 1,000 developments that have been put in place since the law has been to work. And by the way, over half of those have been built by not-for-profit developers like Habitat for Humanity. So it's important for people to understand that this is a law that allows all types of private developers to participate. More than half are not-for-profits. And again, there have been questions raised about five such projects. And we applaud the efforts of law enforcement to make sure that developers are complying with the law. I guess, you know, at the end of the day here, I want to go back to what John was saying about who this law serves. One of the best things about this law is that it provides mixed-use housing. Not just the affordable units are important, though those are very important, about 30,000 units over the course of the time in which the law has been at work. There is another almost 30,000 market-rate units, which create all kinds of options for people who don't fit into the category of those that have access to the affordable units. Massachusetts needs to be doing everything it can to be building more affordable housing. If you want more affordable housing in Massachusetts, you need to vote no on question two.
Listeners, we're talking about question two on the ballot this November, which would repeal the state's affordable housing law. We have with us someone who's for it and someone who's against it. We want to know what you think, whether you've been able to get a house through 40B, whether you feel that your community's zoning rules have been misused because of 40B. We're at 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have a call from James from Somerville. James, do you know how you're going to vote on question two?
I'll absolutely be voting no. I actually grew up in an affordable apartment that was built under 40B in the town of Randolph, and want to use that experience to show how important this is to local communities. The only reason that my mother and my brother and I were able to stay in Randolph, where my parents had gone to high school, where my grandparents still lived, where I had aunts and uncles and all sorts of a good support network, was because Randolph took its responsibility seriously and used this law to build housing so that people could stay in town and so they could welcome new people into the suburbs. And I was able to get a fantastic education and grow up in a nice community because of that. And I want to do away with this myth that this just runs roughshod over communities. It does what communities want, I live in Somerville now, which is a community that has met its affordable housing goal and still actively tries to build more. And it uses this. The Somerville Community Corporation, Somerville Homeless Coalition, the city itself, all make use of the comprehensive permit process.
James, thank you for that. So, John Belskis, what about this? We hear from a caller who says he wouldn't have his unit if it weren't for 40B.
That's debatable. The town that he grew up in, that he fortunately got one of these affordable units, they don't talk about how the towns get hammered by the developers to provide these. It's not an easy process. The town doesn't voluntarily get into them. They would like to have more time to work with them. The other tragedy is that the people that abut some of these projects, their story never gets told. The ones that have to put in new septic systems, have to put in new wells because they've overstepped the norms for that type of development.
So Trip Jones, John Belskis just said towns get hammered by developers.
Couple of quick points, sure. Sasha. Number one, I live in Wayland. Right across the street from where I live, we have a 40B development going up. I am intimately familiar with the challenges of building this kind of a housing. I understand the questions that are asked about what could happen. There has been a great study done by Tufts University that dug into a whole bunch of specific developments and looked at a lot of the legitimate questions that are raised by people about how these developments may play out in their communities. And overwhelmingly, we have seen that they do not materialize. And one of the benefits of this law, Sasha, is that it's been at work for 40 years. We can see the track record, and we can see how it works. And unfortunately, John is using a whole bunch of misinformation to create concerns and hysteria that are unhelpful. And one last point, this whole question would not be on the ballot had it not been for a single individual who contributed just short of $300,000 to pay for the signatures to put this question on the ballot, a guy by the name of Roland Van Loos from Chelmsford. One individual paid just short of $300,000 to collect the questions to put this on the ballot. An organization that John has been involved with, the Slow Growth Initiative, focuses on slow growth, population control. They've been the chief organizers behind this effort to blow up the law.
John Belskis, you look like you have a response
As long as we're visiting the money issue, okay? In 2007 was the first time we filed for an initiative petition. We didn't get enough signatures, unfortunately, because the process is extremely difficult. Roughly 66 days to collect 66,453 signatures, 1,000 a day. So like every ballot initiative, you end up hiring professionals to collect signatures that can work extensive time. Now, let's take a look at what happened in 2007. A similar committee to TRIPS was formed, and they raised something like $6 million to combat that effort. And then when their committee was formed recently, the last time I looked at campaign finance, they were well above $600,000, and I'm running a statewide campaign on $2,000.
I don't know what you're talking about when you say a similar organization. There was no organization created before this time to do what I'm doing. We have created a grassroots – no, let me respond, John. That is just factually not accurate. We have put together a grassroots coalition of 1,500 individuals and organizations from all across the state, environmental groups, business groups, labor groups, housing advocates, faith-based organizations, as diverse a coalition as we have ever had put together in Massachusetts to support affordable housing. We have raised 70%, John, of our contributions that were collected on our last filing came from individuals writing contributions of less than $200. That's our effort. That's John, who we are.
John, I kind of had to believe when I see the size of the major contributions they received.
John Belskis,
and he says they didn't exist back in 2007.
Well,
there was an organization.
The question is on the ballot. Now, John Belskis, as you know, some people believe that this is basically just anti-growth. Do you?
Not at all.
So you're willing to see some affordable housing. You just don't like the way that it's coming
from
into this law.
From day one, we were advocates of affordable housing. That was our preamble from the time we organized. We realized there's affordable housing necessity in this state. Our argument is with the law that is used to abuse cities and towns, and we just don't get the production out of it that we anticipate.
I want to bring in a caller from Cambridge. This is Caitlin. And Caitlin, you have a question for John Belskis?
I do. I would just like to know how repealing this law is going to increase affordable housing. I understand that Mr. Belskis doesn't believe the law is doing what it's intending to do, but I just don't see any proposal for how the problem will be solved.
John Belskis?
I love hearing from people from Cambridge. I lived in Cambridge for 25 years, and I lived in an affordable apartment that didn't cost me much rent because there was a landlord that was willing to rent at low rent. Those apartments don't count. I just got a note the other day from a woman that said, why don't they count my apartment, which I rent for $500 a month, but it's not considered affordable?
Well, the caller's question has to do with many. It's been pointed out that all four of the gubernatorial candidates say that they support the state's affordable housing law. However, most of them say they think it is a flawed law, but they believe it's better to leave a flawed law on the books and fix it than to get rid of it and then have nothing that could spur affordable housing. So John Belskis, if we repeal the law, then what do we do to make sure there's still affordable housing in the state?
Number one, there's a plethora of programs that build affordable housing. They talk like this is the end all, the only one. I can give you a sheet that you can read off of that has all kinds of programs that are still sitting there that aren't utilized as much as 40B because the developers prefer to use 40B to have the upper hand. There's many things that can fix this law, and we can't get them applied, and they won't change 40B for a very simple reason. Proposition 2.5 was promulgated after 40B. You understand what 2.5
sure.
is, okay? To protect towns from adverse real estate increases. We change one word in 40B, which is what we've been trying to do, change a number of words. It reverts to being under the requirements of 2.5, which says the state shall not mandate what it does not fund. The state doesn't put a dime into 40B. But it mandates that every town have 10%.
John Belskis, before we have you continue with that, let me have Tripp Jones jump in. And I'd like you also, Tripp, to address this issue that even the gubernatorial candidates think it is a flawed law. So you still support a flawed law.
Let me, first of all, John has said many things on this show here and also in other environments that just simply aren't true. And if people went out and you did the fact checking,
I'd like you to prove that.
So, John, you've had organizations whose data you use write to you and ask you not to use their data because you're misrepresenting it. So that's a fact. But let me answer Sasha's question. Have you ever seen a perfect law, Sasha? I think it's a good question. Let me tell you, I have been involved with the creation of a number of laws that I think have done a lot of good. I've never seen a perfect one.
But even if this isn't a perfect law, some people say it's a very imperfect law.
Let me tell you why. Again, I live in a community where they've used 40Bs. I'm familiar right across the street from where I live. There's an affordable housing project going up. I've said that before. Let me tell you why I think it's important and critically important. 80% of all of the new affordable housing that's been built in the last 10 years is attributable to this law outside the city. Second point. In the last 10 years, over $9 billion of economic activity has resulted from this law, 50,000 jobs. They project that the next 10 years, we're going to have over $10 billion in economic activity and another 50,000 jobs as a result of this law. We need to be doing everything we can in Massachusetts right now to create more economic activity, not less, do more to create affordable housing options for our working middle-class families and seniors.
But Tripp Jones, despite the good that this law may do, even the state inspector general believes that there are problems with it that it let developers abuse it. Do you think that if you're successful in not getting the law repealed, do you still think we need to fix it?
There have been numerous things done, Sasha, in the last 10 years by both the Romney administrations and the Patrick administrations to put into place regulations to address most of the concerns that the Inspector General and others have raised about how it works.
Not true.
This is the one law that is true.
Not
this is
true.
The one law that actually caps the profits that developers can make. I think it's a good thing in Massachusetts that we've got the private sector being engaged in building affordable housing. This is not a government-run, government-funded program. This is a law that actually gets the private not-for-profit developers like Habitat for Humanity and other for-profit developers to build affordable housing. That's what we need, and we need there to be provisions in place to hold people accountable. That's the way the law works.
John Belskis, I want to go back to you very briefly because I'm not sure you fully answered the last question, which was the caller wanted to know, if this law is repealed, then how do we make sure that we still strive towards affordable housing? Do you really believe that without this law in the books, we will still aggressively try to create affordable housing?
It's almost ludicrous to think that we would remain the only state in the country that would not have a functioning affordable housing program. Of course, they're going to promulgate something that's going to be functional, but we'll also have some oversight, open debate, and recorded vote, which hasn't occurred with many of the adjuncts to 40B that we don't even want to talk about.
Let's go to Bob from Lawrence.
Hi there.
How are you? What's your thought on 40B?
I just had a quick, I just want to go back to the basics, the premise, the foundation of this. Who's to say that it's the government's job to create, quote-unquote, affordable housing? Affordable housing is like a political buzzword that sounds good to everybody who hears it. Who can be against affordable housing? But every time we get involved with affordable housing, it's the unintended consequences. Every piece of affordable housing that goes up seems to end up being a blight on a community. The projects were affordable housing, and now nobody wants to live in a project.
Although, Bob, let me have Trip Jones address
these are the
this.
Unintended consequences.
Sure.
What plan this?
Bob, let me have Trip Jones address this, because you said, why is it the government's job to create affordable housing? I think Trip's point is that 40B actually does not make it the government's job. It just gives developers an incentive to create affordable
housing. No, I think it's
housing.
Working exactly the way we would want it to work, where there is an incentive for the private sector to get engaged and to build a stock of housing that will help to make Massachusetts a better place to live for our working and middle-class families, our seniors, our veterans. That's what government's role is to make sure that there is something that's going to be done to build housing. I think the previous caller, Sasha, asked John a question that he still hasn't answered. He says he's for affordable housing. I don't know how anyone can be for affordable housing and be for blowing up the law that is responsible for 80% of all the new affordable housing built outside the cities in the last 10 years.
Let me bring in another caller. This is Jeff from Alston. And Jeff, you've done property management for years?
Yes, I've worked in property management for over 25 years, and I've managed subsidized housing. I can remember before 40B came along, many cities and towns did not want to have affordable housing in their communities because this would allow moderate-income families to move in, and they saw this as a threat. So they would resort to all kinds of political tricks to not grant the permits. One of the most famous tricks was that the zoning committee simply wouldn't hold any meetings. And 40B came along basically to force cities and towns to take some affordable housing when they didn't really want to. And if this law goes away, we're going back to the old days when the more wealthy cities and towns can keep this kind of housing out of their community.
John Belskis, do you disagree with Jeff's point?
Yeah, you're looking at the wrong aspect of this thing. If you're talking the zoning and things that involve the ability to provide density, reduce density, or whatever, you're talking General Law 40A. And no one is talking about making adjustments to that would make this more all-encompassing for producing housing. Your object is that it's something that has to do with land management, and 40B has nothing to do with that. All it does is impose a requirement.
Trip, before we go back to you, I want to bring in another caller. This is Steve from Harvard, Mass., so someone calling from we're getting a suburban caller. Hi, Steve.
Thank you for discussing this subject. As someone who's not a subject matter expert, I've been quite concerned by 40B, because before moving into Harvard, I did some research of the zoning rules, which have managed to preserve a large amount of woodland, and I'm quite concerned at the idea that on the basis of
So you're concerned, Steve, it sounds like you're concerned about the impact that 40B has had on woods and wildlife and sort of the community that you moved to when you were there.
The prospect would be to move from a situation to where you've got, sort of zoning that has got sort of lots, minimum lot sizes of like 1.5 acres.
Steve, thanks for that. Let me go to Trip Jones. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that the process works, Sasha, is one where developers can come in and make a proposal. The towns have to work collaboratively with the developers to work through a series of issues that need to get attended to. And there are all kinds of opportunities for the cities and towns to develop a proposal that will work for their communities. When there's a dispute, it goes to the state. There's courts can get involved. There's a decision made about how that will play out. But it's important for people to understand that a large number of developments that come about as a result of the affordable housing law are what are called friendly 40Bs, where towns are using the law with developers to do something that otherwise couldn't happen. And, you know, one of the most encouraging things for me as I've been involved with this campaign and working with my coalition, it's been going around the state into all sorts of different communities and seeing the positive stories of housing that, like James said earlier, the caller, if it had not been for this law, 58,000 units have been built that would not have otherwise been built. There are 12,000 in the pipeline right now.
In the time we have left, let me go to one more caller who's on the fence about this. This is Aaron from Dorchester. And Aaron, have you not decided how to vote on question two?
No, not quite yet. Hearing this conversation, it makes me almost not want to vote on question two.
Why do you say that?
It's just I feel there's a lot of misinformation going on, and on both sides. Because I moved to Dorchester about a year ago, and they're looking at building a large mixed, low income as well as mid income facility that would fit right into what we're talking about a block from my house. It's a number of units. It's something like 85 units. It's a whole lot of people coming in, and what I see is the transportation to help the people who will be here, which they have stated quite clearly, most of the population will not have cars, is not there. The public transportation, Boston likes to think there's public transportation out here, but it takes a couple hours to get anywhere.
Aaron, thanks for that. Let me have Trip Jones address that. Trip, what about this, that people feel that sometimes 40B brings in projects that are too dense that the communities aren't ready for, too many people, too many kids in the schools, and the towns aren't ready for these projects?
Yeah, I think, Sasha, the best answer to that is what I said about this tough study that took a look at all sorts of concerns that are raised about how the law would work, what kind of impact it would have on communities. And the negative impacts that people had been concerned about just didn't materialize. I've become familiar with dozens and dozens of stories of all kinds of units that have been built that are not at all like what the caller described. And I think, again, the important thing for people to understand is there's a process by which cities and towns can work through how the developments are
One
built.
Question, who funds the studies?
Much more to discuss, obviously, a lot more to debate. I want to thank both of you for coming in. John Belskis is the chairman of the Coalition to Repeal 40B. He's urging a yes on question two, as he just said. And Trip Jones is the chairman of Vote No on 2 campaign.
To support affordable housing.
Thank you both very much for coming in, John and Trip. Up next, Iraqi rowers on the Charles and NSTAR's new official name. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.